Members, and thank you, members. Good morning. I'd like to welcome you to this meeting today. I just want to apologize for the delay. I was trying to check where all members, especially members of the ANC, is only me. They're nowhere to be found. And it seems I did not get permission to be where they say they are. So that's why you see me on the phone. And it's very embarrassing as well to get such a situation early in the morning. And members, today as well, know that we are meeting the department, and we are going to be briefed by the African Council on the Association to a number of international conventions. I believe this is what we've been requested for some time, and I know Ms. Krem has always wanted to come and brief portfolio committee about the development in the international CA, and we've been asking what conventions and what is that is requested from the committee. Well, I know there were letters that came that requested a lot of intervention on those issues. I see that a lot of people from SARA, I'm not sure whether they've got interest in this or it's part of their duties. I hope they've got permission to come here because I don't want tomorrow a letter from Dr. Fikini or Ms. Rahosh that they were not. They didn't say that they are here, but it's good also to see that the departments are working interlinked. And thank you, members of the portfolio committee, and I'd like to welcome you to this meeting. I was not here last week, and I understand the department is pleased with the bill. I was out of the country. I came back with no clothes because SAE took my whole suitcase. I can't find it. So those are some of the issues that we need to take up. And I believe I'll just introduce members to those who don't know members of parliament. My name is Andile Sundura. I'm the chair of the portfolio committee. And then you have Nampuan Stavri, who is the chairperson of the, who is a member of the portfolio committee. Nampuan Abel, who is a member of this committee. Lile Niki. Nampuan Moral. Okay, thank you, Niki. Then we have Honorable Daphne, who is a member of this committee. Sorry, Honorable Daphne, for your loss. Honorable Kanyako, I only found out yesterday. I didn't know that he passed away. Is he buried? Is it? I only found out. I was away, so I think we'll send our condolences to the family, the portfolio committee. And then we will have Johnny Van der Westen, that's also head of our committee assistant. We have Fiona Clayton, our committee researcher. We have Policy Mamuka, who's our committee advisor. Jago and Tia, she's our committee secretary. I just sent in her to on a few issues. Then there should be someone from PMG. Oh, hi, how are you? And your name?
Sean.
Okay, I'm Sean from PMG. I always all know that in this portfolio committee, whatever you say, it's recorded so that tomorrow you don't come and act to us. And that's where I had the there was my personal assistant. I said, I'll just give over to Mr. Dima just to introduce the delegation and the people of Sarah quickly so that they know who is in this meeting. Any member of the media? Oh, none. Okay, thank you.
Chairperson, may I address you?
Yes,
The chairperson, I know there's most of the time there can be personal aspects that are keeping members of parliament away from our portfolio committee meetings, but I just want to express my concern. Last week we were just less than a handful in the committee meeting, and you see around you what's happening today. And I think we are sending as a committee wrong signals to whoever. And really, chairperson, we must address this. I know it's mostly your party that is the culprits, but please, we must rectify this problem. I know you're not listening to me, but it's fine. PMG is listening to me. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Finance Scalfate. I think I'm also really concerned. I'm going to write a letter for this meeting, and I will assist members. because this matter has been raised on numerous occasions, and very disappointing was last week if the bill was presented to the committee. And I myself am really embarrassed about some of the issues, because some of the people who are not here are the people who've been pressurizing Ms. Louise Graham to come and brief us on these international conventions, agreements, and all the what's the other term is coming? Your this convention, you say agreements, and what the other term, treaties, all those things. They've been pressurizing the department to come and present those issues. So, and I must say, as a member of the ANC, I am very embarrassed because just briefly, quickly, Ms. Moss with right now says that she received permission from the deputy to leave. I called the deputy to leave. She said it's not true. She was lying. So I've got that evidence in my phone, so that it's one of the rest of them, I don't know where they are. Even last week when I asked the briefing when I was away, nobody knows who was away. So I'm not sure how I'll deal with this matter. I think if I will get that letter, and then I will also I would say if the opposition members, if they have issues as well, they can also raise the concern formally and so, and it will be appreciated because it has been long happening. Is there another member going to raise another issue based on this matter?
Honourable Chair, there's been who reminded about something I have already forgotten. You know, we don't serve in one committee as members, we serve in different committees. And last week, this week, is oversight period as well. It might happen that those members who are not here are on oversight. If that is not the question, if that is not the case, really something has to be done.
Thank you, Japan. I only know two members of this committee. I'm not going to entertain these letters, unfortunately. Why I'm saying that, but I know you said on the Kuru. There are some members here who say now they're all oversized, suddenly because there's a talk. And there's never been to other committees that have always been present. So it's one of the things that I will look. I don't know. The only member who I always know is Masol, who says on communication, and Shwana when it's convenient for her to go to basic education, and who's no arrive when it's convenient that she put her side. So I think the matter that we at the ruling party will come take it up as well, but the rest of them, I don't know them to serve in any other committees. And my understanding in Parliament, if there's a bill in front of the committee, it takes priority. Unless I'm wrong enough. Where's the legal before? If there's a committee, if there's a bill in front of that committee, it then takes priority more than anything. That's why when the bill comes, we leave everything as Melendi. We have, you brought a bill here, every week was bill. That is the rules of Parliament. That's what I want to just clarify on the issues. But I understand what you're saying as well. But it embarrasses Honourable Japan if it's somebody of the ruling party. Even members of opposition, I would understand. No, only one or two. Oh, you must keep me up in all these committees so that you feel from it. But I'll check the matter up. I will check it up. And also, do you want to raise something? Thank you.
Chair, now, I was just going to say, take it up with you and your chief whip.
But the deputy is here. I've already meeting. After this meeting, immediately I'll go into them. That's a problem. Thank you, members. Can you kindly continue to on that one? You've commented on the apologies already. So can I take it? We'll take it up on that one. Thank you, Mabundema.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning to the honorable members of the committee. Maybe let me start by taking this opportunity to apologize on behalf of the Director General of Arts and Culture, who couldn't be with us today because he's finalizing the audit matters. And also I'd like to take this opportunity to then introduce members of the delegation from the Department of Arts and Culture. And I'll start by introducing myself. My name is Mr. Kemba Lima, the DDP. and Preservation in the Department of Arts and Culture. Next to me, Mr. Tendra Nomo, who is the director in the digital office. And further left is Masia Ohanidi, who is the Deputy Director General for Institutional Governance in the Department of Arts and Culture. Next to her is Ms. Louise Graham, who is the Chief Director for International Relations in the Department. And behind the seat of both Ms. Graham and Ms. Hanedi is Mr. Lord Mikralibibi, who works in the DG's office. And next to Mr. Alibibi is Mr. Sema Hadane, who is the parliamentary officer in the Minister's office. And behind Mr. Sema Hadane is Ms. Kaweka Kasamba, who is also a parliamentary officer in the office of the Deputy Minister. If you allow me, Chairperson, to then maybe hand over to the colleagues from SARA and the Robin I to introduce them.
Thank you, Dr. Shun. We have three units represented from SARA today, and they are the Underwater Cultural Maritime Unit, representative is Sheena Bruce. Sheena Bruce is represented on my right. She's standing in for the Built Environment Unit at SARA. And the last one arriving on my left is Lynn Abrams, and she's from the Heritage Objects Unit. Thank you.
Good morning, Chairman. My name is Umulon Zuzo. I actually am coming from UWC as a student of the African Program in Heritage and Museum Studies. With a group of my fellow classmates, next to me is Mrs. Hidaya Jaba from Tanzania. She's also a student in that program. On next to her is Mr. Vincent Tiba. He's also in the program. Next to Mr. Diba is Mr. Alex. He's also in the program. Behind Mr. Diba and Alex is Nokutula Nyengere. She's also in the program. And next to Nokutula is Zom Chemba. We're all doing the same program, the African program in Heritage and Museum Studies. The African program in Heritage and Museum Studies.
Thanks once again, and Amanda, wow, we are blessed with students of UWC, and I think that's not the only portfolio committee that you'll attend, especially where you've got a Catholic resource. Fortunately, there is Mr. Dima, the DTG of Heritage. They will also tell you how to get that resume as well. So, thank you once again, members. Thank you to the members who just attended the portfolio committee. I say honorable camp, welcome, and thank you for being here. Thank you to the students. I must say, thank you. We are here to students in the photo committee. Now you can see the students, they're laughing because they heard what I said. Thank you once again. I'll give over. Ms. Graham, I must say thank you very much for coming today because we've been waiting for this international convention. One of the issues that we've always raised is to say that sometimes the international conventions, they, as much as we are here with them, sometimes they work to our disadvantage. I'm not sure if you are the president today, you will give us authority. And I've been getting letters as well on how to follow on or on Parliament. And thus, I'll be happy if you just remind Parliament, because you've been addressing the letters to me as well, to say that, what is it, when you present, I know you've given me all the information, so that we can, all as members of Parliament, have that responsibility to follow, whatever that is making. I know you've been consistent, I know I've not been coming back to you, because I wanted this opportunity to come, so that you can give members also clarity, what is it that is, you were talking about in those letters, it's a matter that I'm following it up as well. And I'm happy because we've been really waiting for this moment as well. But to further say that, by the way, my sincere congratulations on your say congratulations. Rumor Mile has new division development. All the best in your new portfolio. And let no one find a little shade when you are the new division. Thank you so much. And thank you for inviting once again us to the. What was it? Your strategy. Thank you so much. I would miss them. I'll be able to get some of those documents for members of the portfolio committee. Please, I would really appreciate it, especially on the resolution. Just want to say the students, the parliament is not like this. So I am not sure what happened to members. As I said, you must follow it up. And I would like to see more students of coming to such portfolio committee. I'll give you over to DJ.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Once again, I would just go through the presentation as prepared. I'm not going to waste time to look at the table of contents, but I'll go straight to the introduction. Just to say to Parliament that the Department of Arts and Culture embarked on a process to appeal to a number of international instruments or conventions in 2007. Also, the department engaged on an elaborate process, including consultation with the state law advisors at the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development and Foreign Affairs. And the reason for that was to ensure that the content of these conventions did not run counter to the provisions of our constitution or to our international relations. And consultation with the center also took place. Both consultations with the sector and the state law advisors concurred on the need to accede to these conventions. Now, currently, as a country, we are a member state of the following international heritage conventions. Not all of them are stated here, but some of them. It's the UNESCO Convention Concerning the Protection of the World Cultural and Natural Heritage, the 1972 Convention, the UNESCO Convention for the Protection of Cultural Property in the event of armed conflict, which is the 1954 Convention, UNESCO Convention on the Means of Prohibiting and Preventing the Illicit Import, Export, and Transfer of Ownership of Cultural Property, as well as also the other Convention on Cultural Diversity, which is not necessarily stated in this particular presentation. And of course, the conventions that we would like to ratify are the following four conventions. For the purpose of the presentation today, we're going to be focusing on three, because the three that we are presenting today have come through cabinet. The one on intangible cultural heritage hasn't. So today I will be doing a presentation on the UNESCO Convention on the Protection of the World Cultural Heritage, which is the 2001 convention, UNESCO Convention for the Safeguarding of Intangible Cultural Heritage, which was done in 2003, UNESCO Convention on Stolen or Illegally Exported Cultural Objects, which was signed in 1995, and the second protocol to the Hague Convention of 1954 for the protection of cultural property in the event of armed conflict. This was amended in 1999. Now, starting with the UNESCO Convention on the Protection of Underwater Cultural Heritage, this convention's purpose is to provide for the protection of underwater cultural heritage. And the question is, what is underwater cultural heritage? So underwater cultural heritage refers to all phases of human existence having a cultural, historical, or archaeological character. It includes, among other things, shipwrecks, fish traps, shell middens, and many other things that are found under the water. The convention promotes cooperation in the protection of underwater cultural heritage between state parties. It advocates the preservation of underwater cultural heritage for the benefit of humanity and provides for state parties to take appropriate measures to protect this underwater cultural heritage. It also promotes in situ or underwater preservation as the first option and encourages the long-term preservation of recovered underwater cultural heritage. And maybe just to say that it's very important that I explain myself to the honorable members why it becomes so important to then encourage the in situ protection or conservation. Let us argue that this underwater cultural heritage is better preserved underwater. Because once you take it out of water, it then gets exposed to elements like more oxygen. And the process of oxidation, it then sort of takes away and just crumbles it. And if you put it for a very long time outside water, it would sort of lose its authenticity. So that's why most of the time the preservation is underwater. That's why they encourage even going down there, diving, so as to observe and do archaeological studies and all those kinds of things. The convention states that the commercial exploitation of underwater cultural heritage is fundamentally incompatible with the protection and proper management of underwater cultural heritage. However, close examination of the convention reveals that this can be mitigated through regulated salvage activities, facilitated by an effective permit system, and supported by a national policy on underwater cultural heritage. So, as we normally talk about pillaging, as we talk about theft in museums, there is also theft that is directed at underwater cultural heritage. That's why it's very much important that it's protected. And that there is a permit system where people, if they want to go underground and do archaeological studies, archaeological surveys, they need to be permitted to do so. Otherwise, all these kinds of treasures that are underwater could be lost to humanity or to current generation and future generations. Now, the National Heritage Resources Act of 1999 already provides standard protection for all wrecks being used, or all wrecks being any vessel or aircraft or any part thereof which was wrecked in South Africa, whether on land, the internal waters, the territorial waters, and it's older than 6 years, of which the South African Heritage Resources Agency considers to be worthy of conservation. So in terms of this conservation, it only provides protection of underwater cultural heritage older than 100 years. And I think that it's better for us in terms of our own legislation. I think our legislation, I can say in this case, is much more advanced because it says once anything is older than 60 years, it is worthy to conserve for posterity. The ratification of the convention will provide additional protection to the shell millions, fish sheds, shipwrecks, and objects, but of course, will not on its own ensure the protection of humans. Shipwrecks or other life. So to ensure protection, the department has developed a national policy on underwater cultural heritage. Maritime archaeology and salvage of underwater cultural heritage is extremely expensive, dangerous and time-consuming pursuit. Currently, there is limited funding available for maritime archaeology research and few opportunities for invested persons to contribute. As we speak, in fact, I try to condemn today with some of my colleagues in terms of how many maritime archaeologists do we have in the country. The kind of statistics that I got, it's like we only have 6 that I know so that are in their system, in the country, with so much coastal cities and towns. However, regulated research of salvage activities will create sustainable opportunities for previously disadvantaged communities and individuals to benefit from underwater cultural heritage through skills development, capacity building, creating on-site job opportunities, supporting the diving and conservation industry, also increasing awareness of underwater cultural heritage and its tourism potential. Because it should be told, there will be very few people in our country who have an understanding of underwater cultural heritage, who have an understanding of the treasure that this country has in terms of the heritage that lies, you know, that is submerged in our waters. And of course, the tourism potential of such heritage. So SARA has established an underwater cultural heritage unit to manage and facilitate these processes. But I must say that as much as that particular unit is established, the issue of capacity is a challenge which we have to look at as a country going forward. As I did indicate that, the number of maritime archaeologists that we have in this country is very limited. So that is why we want to request the Parliament to support us or the department or the country to accede to this convention, because we'll then be exposed to other international best practices, will be able to get access to the training that is being provided out there, so that we can even increase the number of people who can participate in the management of time and teach in the country. I go now to the next convention, the UNITOID Convention on Stolen or Illegally Exported Cultural Objects. This convention is complementary and supplementary to the 1970 UNESCO Convention on the Means of Prohibiting and Preventing Illicit Import, Export, and Transfer of Ownership of Cultural Property from the point of view of private law. Now, we already are members or are signatories to the 1970 UNESCO Convention. But it has four limitations. One of the limitations is that it is based on the power of the negotiations, the power of negotiations among various member states. You can't use law as a recourse to claim your cultural property. If I may say, to take this opportunity, Chairperson, and say, there are cases of the 1800s that are still being discussed within the parameters of the 1970 Convention. What comes to mind is the Elgin marbles from Greece that were taken by the British, I think in 1860 from the mistake. They are still being negotiated today because the Greeks say they want their Elgin marbles back, and the British are saying, look, we purchased. Mr. Elgin actually purchased it. So there has been even negotiations about whether the Greeks can be satisfied with the copies of the marbles. And the Greeks are saying, no, but they are our cultural property, we want the original. So I'm just saying that that's one particular limitation. There's another case of the Ethiopian obelisk of Ankh that were also taken by the Ethiopians during the Abyssinian War in 1960. They were only returned to Ethiopia only in 2005. Now you can see the period between 1936 and 2005. But this particular convention is an improvement to that. The UNITOID Convention focuses on the recovery phase of stolen or illegally exported cultural objects and sets uniform rules and conditions for restitution claims of stolen objects as well as return claims of illegally exported cultural objects. The UNITOID Convention offers certain advantages that are not part of the 1970 Convention in my opinion. The UNESCO Convention requires cultural objects to have been designated by the state requesting return, whereas the UNITOID Convention does not require that the object be inventoried by the state for it to be covered by the convention. What it means is that the 1970 Convention only applies to state-related cultural property. Now, the UNITOID, it actually applies to even heritage objects that are not necessarily in the inventory of the state. These cultural objects could be from private homes. It could be your own relic that is related to a particular community, private home, traditional communities, private collections that are not yet registered or designated by the state to be claimed back. However, this does not mean that the state party should not take the inventory of cultural objects seriously, and it is very difficult to claim successfully cultural objects that have been invented. It does mean that you do not have, private collectors should not have inventories, because it's always easy if you have got an inventory, if you have got a list that defines, describes a particular heritage object. So if it gets lost, you are able to even provide a photograph. You are able to describe its qualities and characteristics. Because it's only through that your Interpol, international police, are able to even help in tracking down some of these cultural properties. As the UNITOID Convention operates from the point of view of private law, it also allows private owners to make use of normal legal channels available in the country where their objects are held to reclaim their objects. So it means just normal legal processes can be used when you know you are members into a UNITLOID and the convention. So the operation of the UNITLOID convention is facilitated by international tools such as Interpol that offers a database of stolen cattle projects. UNESCO has also established a national legislation database on the protection of cultural heritage. UNESCO and World Customs Organization have collaborated a model export certificate of cultural objects to be considered for adoption in part of its entirety by member states, because this helps also to reduce the number of cultural properties that leave countries because of this certificate, because then if a person has the certificate, then it is a level of trust that then there could have been a much more lawful transaction. South Africa has made some progress on issues relating to the protection of cultural heritage. Section 32 and 33 of the National Heritage Resources Act, number 25 of 1999, covers issues of the protection of cultural objects. The legislation covers, among other issues of control of export and import of cultural objects, the declaring of an object or collection of objects as heritage objects, and the compilation and maintenance of the inventory of the national estate. And of course, it is important to mention that the department, in collaboration with the South African Police Service, Interpol, the South African Heritage Resources Agency, and the South African Museum Association, established the National Forum for the Law Enforcement of Heritage-Related Matters, which we call NALE. It brings all these agents in a form of a network to facilitate the flow of information and intelligence on heritage-related crimes. It becomes quite important because South African police begin to appreciate the value of heritage. They begin to understand heritage objects, and they are then empowered to intervene in case there is this illicit trafficking of cultural property. For this convention to be effectively implemented, there has to be, among other things, the strengthening of security measures at heritage institutions. Though most institutions have databases and registers, these need to be synergized and synchronized for effective control and protection of the important heritage. The resources of the South African Heritage Resources Agency will need to be increased to effectively deliver on the convention. And of course, there would need to be awareness creation campaigns that are designed to ensure, to demonstrate the seriousness and severity of heritage-related crimes in the country. And that is why, honorable members of Parliament, we also here to request that Parliament supports that South Africa joins the international community in the fight against illicit trafficking of cultural property through accession to this joint convention. Now, the last protocol, the last convention is the second protocol to the Hague Convention of 1954 for the protection of cultural property in the event of armed conflict. The second protocol complements the 1954 Hague Convention. It is designed to improve the application and the effectiveness of the convention. It applies to situations of international and non-international armed conflict and aims to improve the protection of cultural property in the event of armed conflict. It establishes and enhances systems for protection of designated cultural property. State parties are required to put in place practical measures in peacetime to safeguard cultural property. These include the development of inventories, planning for emergency measures for protecting cultural property against fire and structural collapse, which are common phenomena during the times of wars and conflicts. Planning for the removal of movable property and the provision for adequate in-situ protection in the event of an armed conflict. The designation of competent authorities responsible for the safeguarding of cultural property. Advantages for South Africa would include that the country will be party to the sharing of international expertise and best practices on the protection of cultural property. The protocol also establishes an intergovernmental committee that supervises the implementation of this protocol, of the convention. It also establishes an international fund. State parties can apply for financial or other assistance from this fund for purposes of putting in place practical measures in this time to safeguard cultural property. South Africa already has a policy and legislative framework that addresses issues of stolen or illegally removed cultural property through the National Heritage Resources Act No. 25 of 1999. Legislation will have to be amended to address critical issues that are currently not covered, such as strict regulation of the location of cultural property in relation to military objectives. I'll make an example. If the contracting parties agree that in case of the war, they will respect one another's cultural property. But then it becomes a problem if, say, your cultural property is listed in the castle, which is military objective. The very fact that the castle is five soldiers there, it becomes a military objective because then it can be used for military purposes. So you have to ensure that your cultural property is not in a place where it could be referred to as a military objective. So those are those arrangements, and that's why it's important that countries should understand these things. And being a member of this protocol, it places you in good stead to understand the details of this matter, so that you are always prepared, you always know how you will be able to protect your cultural property in the event of an armed conflict. Of course, there will be cost linked to the location of cultural property from areas that are close to military objectives. So at times, you might have to take away cultural property from any place which can be referred to as close to military objectives. Distinctive marking of cultural property will also have financial implications. If I remember very well, there is what they call the blue shield, which is being used to ensure that everyone is aware of the fact that there is cultural property there. So in the event there is a war, people then look at that and know that they shouldn't necessarily destroy it because they have their house. Very pleasant cultural property for those countries. And of course, it would mean that the Department of Arts and Culture develops short and medium-term plan on the phasing in of key requirements of the convention. So as you become part of the convention, you then have to begin to plan how you would then implement the convention. And what is good as well is that if you are a signatory or if you have acceded to the convention, it seems to get a sympathetic hearing from other state parties or member states to support you, even with technical support or at times even financial support to be able to protect your property. And I know that the issue of the war becomes a very far-fetched matter. You know, we are a very peaceful country, but wars are not caused by, you know, there's always aggression. There are aggressors. You might not be an aggressor, but you might have to defend. So it's very important that we always put measures in place to ensure that in the event, and God forbid, there is war, you are able to protect your cultural property. Because in most countries, we've seen what has happened in other countries. We've seen what has happened in Iraq, where millions of heritage objects were looted from the Iraqi museum, as much as some of them have been returned through also these particular international instruments. But not all of them have been returned. Some of them will never be recovered. So, to conclude, honorable members and chairmen, the department requests the Portfolio Committee on African Culture to support South Africa's accession to the three international conventions that were presented today.
Thank you, Mr. Dima, and thank you for the presentation. Is there any member wants to add from the department? Just to check, maybe if there's something that's further addition before we ask our question.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chairperson. I could also keep my comments for the answer, the question and answer session, but maybe I thought to just add one or two points about why it is so important for South Africa to become a state party to these conventions. The technical aspect has been set out very clearly by Mr. Nima. But maybe to just reiterate, you know, the global debate on culture and heritage is an ongoing debate which happens in some of the major capitals, whether in New York at the United Nations, whether in Paris at the UNESCO, whether in Rome at UNIDROIT, which stands for the International Institute for the Unification of Private Law. In those capitals of the world, that is where the global debate on culture and heritage and the protection of culture and heritage and so on is happening. And if South Africa is not a state party to those international treaties, international conventions, protocols, because they're all international treaties, just different kinds of treaties, if we are not present and if we are not participating, we miss out on a number of extremely important issues that are taking place in those venues. The one, of course, is participating in the debate itself so that we are stay on top of international trends, international thinking in terms of protection and development. Because it's also a dichotomy between how much do you protect and how much do you allow for development. Ms. Lindeman touched on that as well. The issue of access. If you don't have access to these resources, you cannot study them, you cannot develop, you cannot, and they even add, in many cases, add to economic well-being of a country. These conventions that we put before you, the treaties that we put before you now, we are not at the moment participating in, which means we don't benefit from the best practices, we don't benefit from the discussions, we do not benefit from the technical expertise that are out there that deal with these issues on a daily basis. The funding that is available for protection, development, and so forth. But then also, very importantly, South Africa's voice has not been heard in terms of how these issues develop. When these conventions were adopted originally, in many cases, South Africa had a fairly strong voice in the development of those conventions. We were part of the negotiating processes. In some instances, not these conventions, but some of the others, as you're well aware, we even led international, intergovernmental negotiations on cultural conventions and heritage conventions. And it is important for us to become a state party, because if you're not a state party, you fall off the grid. You simply cannot actively participate anymore and make your voice heard. You can participate as an observer, but you don't have a vote and you do not have a strong voice. So it's extremely important for us to be participating in these. And then, of course, as Ms. Ndiba indicated, the issue of cultural heritage, restitution. We know that a lot of South African heritage is out there in the world. He mentioned the Alger marbles and he mentioned the obelisk of Asum in Ethiopia. We were very instrumental in getting that obelisk at Asum back to Ethiopia from Italy, where it had been taken. South Africa was very instrumental in that. And I think one of our obligations, of course, on the African continent is also to lend, where possible, the support of South Africa in terms of the heritage and the cultural objects of the whole continent. And we have a voice, and we are looked at as experts in the field. So I think South Africa should also step up and take that role on. We're not talking about Big Brother or anything like that. We very much do this in consultation with the fellow countries of Africa. But I think also on the continent, many countries who are small and who do not have the resources and the voice that South Africa has, looks towards us for support to preserve and protect the heritage of the continent. But Chairperson, thank you very much. I just wanted to add those few thoughts. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ndiba. Thank you for the additions that we have made. Members, this has been presented in front of you. Thank you for this, who has been waiting for a long time for it, because I think, but I'm not happy that you send it when I'm later, before we can really also scrutinize it ourselves. But I think the first question that I would like to raise on those conventions. They remind, these are the questions that you might not be able to answer, but it's questions that I feel that personally we need to ask them. I will start with the issue that is on this UNESCO convention that you're speaking about, especially this one where you speak of issues of coups and wars and whatever we name. I'm not sure how this question, whether it would be correct to ask it, as I said, we might not be able to answer it. On the issue of our heritage in South Africa, in terms of the, our Kibuki library in Mali, that's something we might not be able to answer it. Maybe it might be the UN special military, because one of the issues that I thought when that happened in Mali, the rise of the rebels, the first thing was to protect our heritage, especially our African heritage. South Africa spent a lot of money on that project, and I spent a lot of, even though we haven't got the statistics yet, or audit, I would say, of how many damage, good property was stolen or damaged and all that. So it did hit the community. That's why we released a statement on such issues. So my question would be now, how would this convention support it? I heard your statement, but I'm trying to really analyze it, really, because those are some of the issues that I'm really concerned about, to say that if then there is something that is in, that belongs to Africa, I might sound negative. It's not important, but I've seen in many wars, especially where there is, you can never go and burn the, what is it, the London block. That some issues in certain countries, they are first protected because that's the most important area. So I had a concern about this, especially where the United Nations is very involved, because obviously the peacekeeping and the certain issues of importance that you guard at first. Secondly, you speak about UNESCO or this UNESCO conventions. As I was listening to you right now, I know sometimes they will talk back to the country, maybe it will help us also illegally as well. Rock Island, because of a serious challenge, I thought they'll be here on the issue of the stealing of, what do you call it? You know, the event activities. They mentioned about the activities is with Berlin, but there are people looking for the Berlin or something that they are looking for, whatever that they are looking for. So how those conventions come to such a thing? Because when I followed up, UNESCO will always say that a heritage site to qualify to be a heritage, international heritage site, it must have the following requirements, you know. But now, even this heritage site, there are illegal activities, especially that I must say people that have been caught there are not only South Africans, mostly are Chinese, Taiwanese, Vietnamese, and all the people, it's mostly people from the East, because they say there's special, whatever, I don't know what they eat today. But I'm just saying that if you sign this convention, sending, how far does UNESCO go on also assisting in protecting that world heritage, like Robben Island? It's a serious concern. People are raising it, but I always ask myself, what is it that UNESCO does? Is it also, it does give the whole responsibility to the country? We will support, definitely we will support as Parliament if these are some of the charities that we get. That's why I always say to you, Ms. Grant, these conventions that you want to sign or that you are signing and treating, are they also advantageous to us? Because I'm asking these questions based on to say that if there's an issue that is pending, this is the issue. That's why the DG couldn't understand that Kosi Bay situation. Because we spend a lot of money in South Africa, yes, underwater is important. And there are treasures in humanity. I will never take it away from them. And I think for now, as well, I'm still analyzing some of the things that you said. But on a personal, as a public level, I have a serious concern on the education of South Africa. I've raised it in a certain way on your workshop. You come, South Africans don't know about these things, you know. And that's why when I came the first time and spoke about underwater heritage, I asked why I spend a lot of money digging dead ships under the water. That's what I said to them, I really appreciate them. Why did that one underwater? You know, those things are gone, they're gone, you know. Because what level of education to take these issues to the society? Because if you say now, for example, that culture takes 40 million to, you know, that's the way they, thousands will laugh at me, mostly when I, they don't understand what is the real issue, why this on our heritage. Anyway, because whatever that we do as a country, it's important. That's why some of the things they come up negative, because some people don't really understand how I take so much money, put it under the sea. That's what people are going to say. You know, even they'll say 40 million under the sea, but not giving really the specifics of what is really happening under the sea, you know. So I really have a concern on that. Oh, Sarah, well, I'm happy that you are here, because there, this is how the issues that I've asked you about to say. How far do you go on publicizing that issues that you are doing? Really, because that's why our people don't, firstly, the blacks are scared of water, let's just say, you know. And you don't even have to educate to them what is happening under the water. So it's one of those issues. So I'm raising this awareness, education level, and I really have a serious concern about these issues, as well as this convention that I'm speaking about. So one person wouldn't understand. One of the questions that came in Sanjima when on that book, I had a lot of questions to say, why was our project not guided in Timbuk? And then how do I answer some questions? That's why I'm asking. But if Parliament will give us these letters, we will support these issues. And remember, it's not only Parliament who must understand these things, it's the nation who must also understand these things. I thought I should just ask that question for now. Members, the panel.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Mr. Ndima, thank you so much for such an interesting and very informative presentation. I cannot agree more with our Chairperson. You know, this is very informative. And I felt that you could just go on and on, because it's very informative. How I wish, really, as Chairperson has said, many people could have this opportunity of, you know, knowing what really this means. It's very informative and very interesting. My first question, you know, even though the chief covered me, is with Timbuktu. And during that period of skirmishes, rebels against Mali forces and French forces, there was information there that these rebels have destroyed Timbuktu. And thereafter, there was information that, no, it is not just what really has happened, because, you know, South Africa has a lot of money in Timbuktu. What really is this about Timbuktu? And in underwater cultural heritage, you said something about lack of capacity. I didn't get you clearly, because you said something about Parliament asking you, what do you intend really to enhance or to improve the capacity regarding this underwater cultural heritage. And no, it's only those two questions. But I cannot agree more really with the Chairperson that really how I wish South Africans can get this information we have just got now. And so lastly, really you have made it clear to me the reasons for us to support that South Africa must be part of this. To me, we have given enough reasons to support it.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to say that I fully concur with the previous two speakers in connection with the education part of the underwater heritage. I think it's very important that our people should know about it, and should see the importance of conserving that part of our heritage as well. To me, it is obvious, Chair, that we should be part and parcel of these international conventions. It is really important, as the lady here motivated. I just want to ask, we had presentations on four of the international conventions, not the safeguarding of intangible cultural heritage. When do you expect shall we be considering that? And then a second question. You say that there currently is limited funding available for maritime archaeology. If we say limited funding, the amount approximately, and then the last question, You were mentioning the obelisk in Cambodia, the Greece marble, etc., etc. Are there any well-known South African examples of any of our heritage objects that are currently in some other country which we want to get back? Thank you.
Thank you, Richard. Listen, I think all of us in South Africa can not more agree with this treaties and the importance of these inventions. But we are living in a real world, and I just want to read a short paragraph I picked up in the book Art and Cultural Heritage Law, Policy and Practice. I picked up on the Cambridge University Press. I think this sums it up very good. Underwater cultural heritage is at risk, not only from the inevitable destruction of time and tide, but also from those for whom the lure of gold is more valuable than knowledge. And I think this is very important. Many states with a rich store of underwater cultural heritage have recognized the importance of this finite resource, not in monetary terms, but in archaeological terms. The knowledge that can be gleaned from an appropriately scientific excavation of a site. Unfortunately, giving effect to such a policy is fraught with difficulties. The nature of many underwater cultural heritage sites lying often in treacherous waters beyond coastal state surveillance makes enforcement of state legislation perplexing. A low priority and consequent merged budgets for most states, cultural heritage institutions exacerbate these difficulties. So I think this is very important what has been said. And then I will also want to add more. I want to ask the chairperson if we can agree or not agree today that SARA, the institution that was created by the state to look after our cultural heritage, are they in a mint condition doing their jobs perfectly? And we can also ask what can be done to make sure that SARA is doing their job very well. And I just want to know if there was any convictions in the past year or two for people that contravene this specific conventions, etc., etc. So it's very, this convention is a very nice to have thing. I think all of us agree with the importance of it. But in the first place, can we put it at work? And, you know, we all know that abalone is against the law to take it out, and but everyone is making money out of it, and in the future people will know there's a lot of words in code lying beyond the surface of the sea, and they will not look at the cultural importance of something like that. Thank you, Chairperson.
I would also the other questions, maybe I don't know if you understand the questions that have been asked. I know it was not your issue, but because we are here already. But I'll put you in trouble, the students are here. If they want to ask any questions, I would allow them. Don't be shy, this is the parliament that we voted for. So ask anything, Mr. Dima. He's very intelligent, he's one of the most senior members of the department, who is co-controller of the department. So you are allowed to ask, just raise your hand so that I can see you. Mr. Dean.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think the questions that were raised, let me just start by the Kimbuck Library. That first and foremost, I mean, one of the issues that has been raised by honourable members was the issue of education, was the issue of awareness. So the communities are aware of the significance and value of the cultural properties. local community actually played a prominent role in protecting most of the manuscripts. Because the library that South Africa supported is just one area repository that is there. But there are local communities who have got these manuscripts that they keep and they protect. And they played a prominent role in also protecting them. But also, without suddenly being exact about the destruction, I want to say that the kind of report that came out in the media was way overstated.
It was called, or was it me? I know Nietzsche would say
something.
You have always been funny. At your age, you are still hot. I want really.
So the thing that I can't give the exact statistics, but I must say that some of the things were just overstated. But also very important to also indicate that UNESCO immediately after that particular incident put together a task team that went down to Timbuktu, started, you know, looking at all the things that are there, doing the plans, supporting and doing all the kinds of things that these conventions are calling for. Because the Timbuktu manuscripts are also seen as the cultural property for humanity, not only for the Malians, not only for Africans, but the whole world. So, if you are a member to this convention, you stand to benefit from those quick interventions and support. And even if there are things that are taken or looking at events, other countries will ensure that even if there is selling that's happening somewhere else, they will be able to assist in terms of tracking those and taking them back. So that's one of the benefits of being signatory to this convention, because you've got so many friends that look after your own heritage. You also help other countries in protecting their heritage, like South Africa did as well, in the case of Timbuktu, in terms of supporting through the library construction. And of course, there are issues that you have raised, Chairperson, about Avalon, and that's also an international problem. And as an international problem, it also requires international cooperation. So the challenges that we might be having, I'm sure the colleagues from Robben Island might even speak much more eloquently than myself in terms of challenges that could be there. But if we then enter the international scene, we will also be able to share our challenges with the whole world, and we'll be able to benefit from their own experiences and be able to even tap on the expertise that is there. And of course, forging partnerships with other agents, because I know for a fact that if you look at the waters around Robben Island, environmental affairs is also involved there in terms of monitoring and protecting some of the natural heritage resources that are there. Avalon, I think, is one of those things that they protect. And I just think that with all these partnerships internationally and even at home, putting those partnerships at home, there's a lot that can be gained in terms of protecting our properties and our cultural heritage. There was an issue of awareness. I think that I've spoken to that, and that it's something that we have to do to ensure that people in this country are aware of this information. And I spoke about capacity more than money when it comes to underwater cultural heritage. And in fact, I was not even asking Parliament to help us in capacity. What I was asking from Parliament is that if it could support in accessing this particular convention, because we believe that by being passed to this convention, we'll be able to learn more about underwater cultural heritage. Will be able to expose to strategies that other countries have put in place to protect their cultural heritage. Will be exposed to experts in different countries that could assist us in terms of how can we better preserve, how can we better ensure that people have got access to these resources underwater. So that's the kind of capacity that Umbani is looking at. But we're saying that we will be able to have access to this kind of capacity through the accession to this particular convention. It was just put as Mr. Hare has clearly indicated that will then be part of the world community that in terms of looking at this particular kind of cultural heritage. And then in terms of cultural heritage, the question that was asked by Honorable Sanskrit, we would like to bring the intangible cultural heritage to Parliament, but it still has to go to Cabinet. We did a Cabinet memo, which then the government department felt that it shouldn't go through because we do not have policy for intangible cultural heritage. And then we have since developed our own national policy on intangible cultural heritage, which we then have to then send back to Cabinet, and once Cabinet has approved, and then of course we will then request that they approve that we accede to the International Convention on Safeguarding Intangible Cultural Heritage. And of course, once Cabinet is approved, we will then have to come to Parliament to ask for approval going forward. There's a question which is a very difficult one. I wouldn't want to attempt, because here in Parliament we have to show what it is. It's about any well-known South African objects that we will want to recover. There will be many, but I cannot necessarily say that this, because as you know, honourable members, that as a country that suffered from imperialism and colonialism, those policies also brought about the pillaging of cultural property in the country. So what we need to do as a country, is to ensure that we begin the whole issue of the audit of all the cultural property that is owned to have left the country during those times. We know also that there is property that was taken out of the country, some of it being taken by some of the embassies who were actually protecting the works of art that were being done by those artists who were expressing themselves during the struggle for liberation. And we know that some of those countries are bringing back those, even free of charge, some of the countries. The Netherlands have the anti-apartheid movement, brought some cultural property in 2004. There are other embassies that are doing the same. So we do have that information, but just to mention specific ones, to say these are the ones that we are looking for, I wouldn't want to commit myself to that, honorable members. But it's a lot. I mean, there's even a homecoming project, which the Art Tutorial Museum was managed, also receiving all their works of art that were returning to the country by those kind embassies and ambassadors who really protected our cultural heritage during the difficult times and are now bringing those back. And of course, we know that there will be some archaeological and paleontological objects that also, leave the country, through theft. And it's through these conventions that we'll be able to trace all these things and also get the support from other countries to reclaim all these kinds of property. Any convictions, I wouldn't want also to say that, because then the next question is, who was convicted? But I know that there has been cases where these matters have been dealt with. But I cannot confirm any convictions that has happened. I would like to stop there in terms of responding. Thank you.
Just a clarity. You have said that regarding this recovery of confiscated or stolen heritage,
terms, even if there is an internal strife, the issue of protection of national property, other countries come in, like it was, what happened in Mali. It was internal strife, but then different countries of the world converged in Mali to try and assist. It is the state's part not to lose national property. So it does apply even when there is internal strife.
Thank you. Good morning. Thank you very much. I work for the Maritime and Underwater Cultural Heritage Unit of PARA, and I would just like to give my input in terms of this convention, because it is something that has been on the cards for a very long time now, the DAC. I'm very excited that it has reached this point, so I hope we can finalize it soon. Because in terms of the National Heritage Resources Act, PARA is obliged, South Africa is obliged to manage these underwater cultural heritage sites. They are specifically mentioned in the legislation in terms of archaeological sites. And this convention can only enhance the way in which we do that. It's a very young industry in South Africa. Internationally, it's very young. Scuba diving is quite a recent phenomenon, past 50 years. We have some catching up to do, but you have to start somewhere. And we're making great progress as we are. It's a very slow process, but we are getting there. And we need all the support that we can get within South Africa, within Africa, and within the international community. From Shibara's side, a lot of what we do, and personally most of what I do, is about awareness and education. I'm so excited that my friends from Robben Island are here today because they can vouch for that. I work a lot with Vincent Fever, and Luria actually learned scuba dive so that he participates in some of our projects. And that's part of the physical training that we provide to university students because there isn't a university program for maritime archaeology in South Africa. We also have a school program that Zach supported in the past, and it's changed a little bit now, but we're hoping to grow that, and you have no idea how excited children from Limpopo get when you teach them to swim and put them in the ocean and they can swim over a shipwreck. The fire in their eyes, I just can't even describe it to you. But it's not just shipwrecks. South Africa has a wealth of indigenous underwater cultural heritage sites as well. And Exundusi in Limpopo is one of the sites that has been on our card for a very long time to be declared a national heritage site. There are also fish traps, waterfalls, rivers, many different kinds of cultural heritage relating to water. And that's those to be explored. It's all about nation building. It's all about understanding each other and where we come from. My final point is to just separate the question of Cozy Bay from this convention, because Cozy Bay, to my understanding, is part of DAC's Golden Economy project, and it doesn't really have much bearing on the discussion around the convention. And that is all I would really like to say for now. Thank you very much.
I think it's going to be a long time. Quite early. I'm going to tell it last. I'm going to show it. I know, Louise, there's something that you wanted me to follow up. Was it this? Oh, this one. Okay. Oh, there's no other thing. Other, should it be honest? I think it was a short meeting. And I guess one of the issues is that it's one of those, we've just presented this committee. I think as we do our comment work, this is one of the priorities that we'll take it up after you've presented. I know it's a long outstanding issue, and I think it's a matter that we need to look at it, and also the fact that our legal side it in terms of such issues as well. And I think my fear for this, you'll be working with some of our people as well, especially on this the legality of this treaties when it comes to that issue. Now I'm out on and Louise as well. We'll follow it up. I think I'll also follow it up with the speakers. I think it's easy. I think I've seen some message that was sent there to me. But what I would do, the future here will compile a report to the committee based on what happened today, and it will take in the head of HEC. I don't know how the parliamentary procedures go. But if this one must be adopted in the House, because it's a section, it is 231, and then there are brackets to that's how the legal people write it. They call it subsection, so that it's a legal language. Yeah, because it's a constitutional matter. So it's very important for us to follow the processes. But I think it will be a priority because it's long absent, you know. But I guess one of the issues that we need to take up those issues that we just raised, you know, especially on the issues of awareness and because sometimes people don't support our government initiatives because they don't understand them. At the end of the day, not that they don't have a phone, which sometimes we don't know. I have now to do without a phone and the one to the other. And Louis, we promise you, I know you'll be on my neck about this. That's why we said we must meet you before we even start the bill, with the bill issue. And is there anything, do you have anything?
Yes, I've got a suggestion, Chairperson. We must go on an outside visit. We must go under Tashi. I've got a swimsuit which will fit for me. And at least if we don't go deeper than 50 meters or whatever, we must, I think it will be wonderful to see a shipwreck that is not so deep. I haven't seen only on television. I'm a bit scared, but I think we can attract a lot of media attention. Can you imagine if you and I dive into the sea? It will be spectacular.
Dear person, I think we should do that in summer.
Actually, it is a good suggestion. Maybe you should arrange for us a very thorough, very big arrangement. But as a bad person, I need to fast before I do that, you know. I know some of them here in the committee, they know they don't even enter the ocean, some of them. I remember some of them were scared at Fulham Park and that little water. So essentially in Amanzanda Manjela, they were so scared to see that people are scared of water. So the ocean guards will talk about it. Actually we should really do an oversight based on some of the issues. And then thank you. I think some of them.
Maybe, Chairperson, we must go down one of these cases with the...
Do you have one in Tula? There are many wrecks. When they do the diving,
in particular, when we take out guests who are not familiar with diving, like Sif, for example, is a master diver, so she had a license to have an oxygen tank on the back. But when we take you out as a guest, we will do just snorkeling. So the wreck would have to be accessible within about 10 meters or so. But we certainly can arrange something closer to December when the water's warmer.
Okay, then it's fine. I think there's something that we can arrange. Maybe around September before we go for recess. Because we can just... Okay, it's something... Anyway, why have you never said that as a portfolio committee? I never thought of that because we would have done it. But we'll see when we speak to Javin Kovkin and then we can go for diving. And we'll just talk to Sarah about it. I think we have to conclude. I think the first meeting we'll finish it in a few hours. To say that thank you for Ms. Ndima for coming to present this. I said that it will be taken up very quickly because I know it's long been outstanding. And I don't think it will be opposed. You know, because international conventions become very important to us, anything on international matters. But that's one of the things. But I think secondly, next committee, the department on what I don't know, but figure, I'm the worst meat in Amtans, neither will worst meat. If we might learn a speech for a week before, because we can't produce the reports when they do not come in their own time. So if you are at this message by tomorrow, let's get the report. I wake up and say, by tomorrow, can you kindly have the report? It makes it difficult for us as members of parliament if we get the report a day before, because we need to read it, we need to study it, we need to analyze it, we need to critique it, you know, and not to do our own research, you know, about some of the things. So if it definitely would come earlier, it's not a good.
Thank you.
one more prayer in there then? Okay. One more question, please.
Two things. I want to ask a question. It's not related to anything that's been said. Are we having that after tea or are we rising now? Are we coming back, or can I ask a question now? Yeah, right. According to our program this term, we've got public hearings on the 14th and 15th of August, public hearings on the white paper. I just want to ask, have different stakeholders been notified of those hearings?
We still need to advertise, so the advert will have to go out this weekend and this weekend calling for submissions. So we're planning to advertise in all provinces in all 11 languages. So we don't get busy with that.
Chairperson, can I add on that? The public hearings, will it be out in Cape Town in Parliament? Is the one that's been held in Johannesburg part of this? That was only the department's meeting in Johannesburg. Is that not part of the public hearing?
Remember, the bill on the first is section 25. The only time when we can rotate is when it's in section 76. No, I think that it's something that we need to discuss, because her understanding, forgive me for my limited knowledge, I was always told that it's a section 25, you cannot go out. That's why the language is built, which is here in London. Otherwise we would have gone out, because a lot of people requested us to go out, and one of the legal advisors said, no, you can't. I remember it very well, otherwise we would have gone out. Yes, that's not true. That's why I'm looking at you like that, because I know all the owners are section 26. Then NPOP goes out. Yes. Yeah, come on, listen. The right. No. Even when you did the language we said, when our service provinces are targeting, I was told legally that you're section 75. One must do the public hearings here in Parliament. But if the section 26, we can go out. I think because it's something that you can look up and feel please. Yeah, I'm not saying I'm not taking it. No. It's what I was advising, because now I'm becoming a bit irritated, because one of them advised me on a fantastic topic. That bill was very similar to the languages one. I even got a letter. I think Johnny was the comment when I read a letter about the lady who said that is this bill for elites only? That's late from NetBank. Why are we not going to provinces? Yes. Okay, can I just say that's a matter that will look, I will look into, because if you want to say it's fine, I'm not stopping you, but I'm just concerned now.
Yeah, no, maybe there's a bit of confusion now. I want to know, public hearings, it's not in respect to the white paper, is it to the bill, because yeah. Those are two different things.
No, it's not about white paper.
So there aren't any meetings on the white paper?
No, we're not doing the white paper. Okay. Can we just leave it there? I'll take the matter up. But now the advert is going out when? Members, can I just say I will get back to you next week on this matter, but the department is coming next week to present their expenditure report, you know. So after that, I'll give you every information, or even during the course of this week, if you can just take your emails, I will just send you a letter that there are some matters that I need to clarify very quickly, you know, because now I'm becoming really concerned about a few issues. But if I just want to thank the department, thank Ms. Ndima for everything. Thank you, Ms. Graham. I know we are here yet after today. You will sleep in peace. Then thanks to the gentleman from PSG. John, thank you very much. Thank you for being in our community. To Sarah, thank you to the students. Thank you after the meeting, you can interact. No one will run away. You must interact with them. You must ask them questions. And all of them. Thank you to members that were able to make it here. I hope and pray that next week members will be here. And no overseas next week, I believe. So I will just look into the nature of the attendance on our panel. I'll raise your concern. I will raise them. And thank you to the staff members of the portfolio committee. I love the mission is adjourned. Thank you so much.
It's going to get weak.